Hey everybody, Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
And go Dawgs! Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Tim and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Tim.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. If you read this morning's daily reflections, it talked about the miracles in AA. And our speaker tonight is one of the miracles. He survived a pretty close call this year. He has been one of the most active guys in the fellowship. He'll probably tell you what happened. If he didn't know, I'll tell you when he finishes. I won't steal his thunder. Bobby, please come up.
I appreciate that. I'm Bobby Little. I'm an alcoholic. And I've got a microphone. I don't know if I can handle all this. This is too important. I'm just another drunk. That's all I am. I'm not anything important. Not anybody special. But I did have an accident this year, and you're the most important person in the room, you know, your first meeting. Thank God you're here. Mm-hmm. I did industrial refrigeration. Now I'm semi-retired. But I had a pneumonia valve break on me, and it just about took me out. They put me in the hospital for 17 days. I was in a coma for 10 days. Mm-hmm. I had a trach down my throat, and they coded me once dead, So I am standing here. I'm actually a miracle. God's got a reason for me to be here. Maybe it's just for the story for you tonight, and then I may be gone. You know, so you never know. You know, I was saying a prayer one night, and I told God, I says, well, thank God there's AA. He said, I hope there's AA in heaven. And he said, well, there's good news and bad news. He said, there is, but you're tearing tomorrow night. So, you know, I have to be careful, you know. But I can laugh, I can cut up, I can have a good time. But it wasn't that way in the beginning. Not at all that way. My drinking, or my alcoholism, excuse me, started long before I had my first drink. The book says we're self-centered, self-seeking, self-will run riot. That's what we are. Do you want me to start over? Melissa just came back in the room. I got an evil eye from her. So anyway, I witnessed a head-on collision on 285 over close to Bolton Road. The guy was coming around the wrong side of the interstate, drunk out of his mind. About 1 o'clock in the morning, I was going home. My girlfriend lived in off Cascade Road, and I lived up in Smyrna. And these two women passed me coming in that curve. And as we came out of the curve, his headlights hit both of us. Well, I started slowing down, and they hit him head on. One of the women, it put her up in the back window of the car, her legs sticking out the window of the car. The other lady, I got her out of the car. She was still alive. Set her down in my car, walked back up to the car, and put my hand on that woman's leg, and she was ice cold. I mean, it killed her instantly. I'd never had a drink before. I didn't drink as a child. I didn't drink in my teens. I witnessed that. I walked over to his car, and the car reeked of alcohol. And he was pinned beneath the steering wheel, and I cussed that man. Cussed him, you know, how in the hell can you do something like that, you know? Well, look where I'm standing, you know. That's self-will run riot. Swore I'd never be like that. I witnessed my next-door neighbor go into epileptic fit, and this thing's on wheels, too, so I'm going to be moving around here sometime. Watched my neighbor go into epileptic fit and drowned in his own vomit. That was when I was 16. So, you know, that was what I saw what alcohol would do for you. So, you know, by no means I was wanting to drink. You know, I just knew that me and my own power, I could handle this. Well, I can't handle it. I got married, and we bought a little house up in Snellville, and went to a Christmas party. I don't know the full how it worked out, but we went to a Christmas party, and I had my first drink. My boss came over to me, and he brought me a vodka and orange juice, you know, screwdriver. He says, "Here, have one of these." And I said, "Well, I don't drink. I've never had anything to drink before." And he says, "You'll like it." So I took a sip of it. You know the promises that Melissa read? They came true. You know, a new freedom, a new happiness. I didn't regret the past. Hell, I couldn't even think of the past. It just didn't even bother me, you know. Financial insecurity left me. I was good to go with alcohol. Now, that wasn't, I mean, I wasn't wide open in the very, no, I was wide open. I got drunk that night. I got to the point where I was falling down drunk. My wife had to drive us home. First time I'd ever had anything to drink, I was falling down drunk. I had to hug the tub. The toilet wouldn't sit still long enough. I had to have something bigger. But he'd given me jalapeno peppers and told me to chase them with vodka and orange juice. So the next day, can you imagine what was burning? I mean, everything was burning. So from throwing up to everything else. So that was my first encounter with alcohol. And then I continued to drink. Then my wife got pregnant. You know, and after a certain point, there's certain things that she can't give me. And I'm young. So I had to seek something else outside of my marriage. Had to have found me a girlfriend. My wife didn't really appreciate that too much. She divorced my sorry ass. My son was 2 years old when she found out about it. And she was a devout Catholic, and she had to change her thing to Baptist because the Catholics couldn't get a divorce, but she was getting rid of me. Whatever she had to do. And she did, and she deserved every bit of it because I wasn't worth having. 2 years old, my alcoholism really took off. I started drinking to kill the pain. I didn't want to see who I was already. Well, I did this for 24 years. My second wife, I say second wife, there was three of them involved. I was married for 25 years, but it took three different women to get that many years put together. So it took a while. But my second wife, she had cheated on her husband, and he was divorcing her, and he was my best friend, so he moves into my house. And then I go with him over to fix her car one weekend, and she invited us to stay for dinner. And he told me, he said, "Well, I got a date." He said, "Bobby, you can stay." He says, "Just make sure you take trash out in the morning." Well, I married the woman, so, you know, that's really smart, you know. And I got a whole row over here that's really, they're going to hit me before the meeting's over, so. That's the reason I'm going to turn this thing that way. If they start throwing things, I'll be able to duck. But that's what my second relationship was. And it lasted for 5 years. And she was cheating on me, and I was cheating on her. It was just somebody to be with, somebody so I wouldn't have to look at me. And I talked to her after I started getting sober. And she says, "You know, if you'd have put the drink down," she says, "we might have had something." And that's possible. I don't know. I mean, that's just not what my path was. So she divorced me. And then over this period of time that I'd gotten a few DUIs, five of them, over the spread of time. I can't tell you exactly what years they were, but, you know, we can go back to DeKalb County and Gwinnett County, and we can find it. I'm sure the computer's got it all on record now. But after my fifth DUI, I was reporting to probation, and I just met my third wife. We'd been out on one date or two dates, casual dates, and I had to show up for probation in between those two. Actually, it was in between the two dates, and went to probation, and they had a roadblock set up in Lawrenceville in front of the probation office. You know, they were baiting a trap is what they were doing. You know, I had to show up for probation. I didn't have a driver's license, so I was driving. This was back before Gwinnett County had a bus system, so, you know, there was no other way for me to get. We didn't have Uber back then. Starting to tell you how old I really am. Don't laugh at me. I've done enough of that. But they caught me, and we'd gone out on our second date, and we were planning something for the third date, and I had to go to court. And of course, when I talked to my probation officer, she said they're probably going to put more fines on you and maybe extend the probation. And I went before the judge, and he says, "Mr. Little," he says, "I'm going to make a believer out of you." He gave me a 5-2 for driving on suspended license, habitual violator. They don't play. Now, when he gave me that, they didn't give me time to pack a bag. They didn't let me go home and take care of everything. It was, you go from the front of the court back to the cell in behind the court, and then they transport you. You're gone. So I had to call her and tell her that I was actually locked up. She didn't know I didn't have a driver's license. She didn't know I'd had 5 DUIs. She wasn't aware that I'd been married 2 other times. You know, this woman thought that I was better than what I really was, you know. Well, she came to visit me while I was in jail. I was in Gwinnett County for 5 months, and she came to see me twice a week. She wrote me 2-3 letters a day. This woman was, she thought, I mean, boy, I'm a bullshitter, and I had her head over heels. I mean, I was good at it back then. I could really do it. So she would write me every day. She was raising 3 kids, and she put money on my books. She was taking every one of my phone calls, me crying the blues. You know, they shouldn't be doing this. And she called my mom, she called my dad, she called my parole officer, a probation officer. Now, I wasn't on parole yet. She called the judges. She called everybody she could possibly call, trying to get me out of jail, saying that I didn't deserve this. You know, I was just driving. Well, I mean, I put a car around a power pole one time. I flipped 1 3 times, landed upside down in a ditch. I never hurt anybody else in a vehicle. Thank God. Yeah, because that could have happened just like that man did on 285. I could have been that man. That easy. That's what the disease does for us. She came to South Georgia and got me out of the work camp that they finally moved me down to, because I went down through the state of through Jackson, which is a diagnostic center. They give you a nice haircut. They shower you and they spray you down for lice, and you know, that real humbling type stuff that they do for you when you go to prison. I got all that stuff. Spent the rest of my time down in Harris County, and she came and picked me up. She had a hotel room. She rented a hotel room not far from where she picked me up at. And we went back to the hotel room, and we consumed the marriage. You might want to put it that, I'll put it that way. How's that? That makes sense. We weren't married yet, but she brought me back to Flowery Branch and married my sorry ass. I put her through hell for 12 years. The woman thought I was more than what I was. 12 years she stayed. She put up with my ass. I did a lot around the house. I did a lot for her. I did a lot for her kids, but I wasn't there. I was drinking every afternoon. I was drinking on the weekends, you know. And you know, if the day ended with Y, I had something to drink. That's the way my addiction had gotten to me. My alcohol had gotten to me. So finally, one day, she got to the point where she just couldn't stand me anymore. Now, I've been through quite a few jobs. You know, we change jobs quite often when we're drinking. You know, just either they're going to get tired of us and run us off, or we don't want to admit who we are, so we leave, you know. But I had lost a job working for an industrial refrigeration company. The company was based out of Jacksonville. My office was out of Birmingham, and I lived in Flowery Branch. And so I lost the job. They called me up and fired me over the phone because I had alcohol on my breath when I went to a job site. And a customer called in, and that's just a, that's a cardinal sin. You know, you go on a job site and you've been drinking, because we deal with some stuff that like to kill me. So there's a reason why you don't, you know, you've got to have all your senses about you when you're working the kind of work I did. But they fired me, and I was doing some subcontract work, and I was drinking and had more freedom to drink, and she finally got to the point where she couldn't stand me anymore, and she saved my life. She left me a note on the kitchen table, said to get out of the house, said that I needed help. She was not gonna, she couldn't put up with me anymore, to get out of the house, seek help, and after a year would see where the love was. I saw that letter, and I went and rented a car, darling, and went and hooked my car up. I had a car in the garage that I've been piddling with, and carried it up to a buddy of mine's shop to get the body work done on it, and left it with him. I told him he could keep it because, you know, I had to get it out of the house because she was, you know, she'd end up with that because she was divorcing me. Then I went down to Norcross so I could drink the way I wanted to drink. And I did that for about 2 weeks. Drank morning, noon, and night. I didn't have to work. I couldn't work. Not have to work. I couldn't work. All I wanted to do was drink. I wanted to kill the pain. And I did that for 2 weeks. And I came to one morning and I decided, you know, I've got to do something about this. I cannot stop drinking. So I got in the phone book and looked up a detox center up in Gainesville. And at the time it was Georgia Mountain Center. And called them and went up there and saw them, and I sat down and talked with the counselor after the nurse had checked my vitals and whatnot. And I'm talking to him, and she walks in back in the room after I'm talking to him, and she told me, she says, "You're going to the hospital." And she says, "Your blood pressure is a stroke level." She says, you're fixing to check out of here." She says, and she pointed to the counselor, and she says, "And you're taking him." Now, I'm a good alcoholic, because when I decided I needed to stop drinking, I still had about a half a bottle of vodka, and I put it under the back seat of my truck in case. Over the 12-year period, I was able to get my driver's license back, because every time I was drinking, my wife drove me around. I learned that you couldn't drink and drive, so I quit driving, you know, when I was drunk. So it made sense to me. It wasn't the alcohol. So anyway, when she said that he was going to take me to the hospital, I said, "Well, I'm okay. I can drive over there. I don't mind. My truck's outside." And that was BS. I was going to go back to the hotel and drink, because the least little hiccup, I was going to go back to drinking. So he took me. They wouldn't let me leave. I met those two people that one day, and that same day, my alcoholism has affected two other people. I just walked in to see if they could help me, and it affected them. They could be liable if I'd have hit the highway with alcohol in my system, with my blood pressure at that level. If I'd have had a stroke, knowing where I came from, they could have been liable. So we affect people. I mean, we don't even realize the people we affect. So that day, I spent the day in the hospital. I got out that night, and after they put fluids in me all day long, I went by my P.O. box to get my mail out. I had to go by the house to see if my wife's boyfriend was there, because I knew she was cheating on me. That's what my other two wives did. But it wasn't my alcohol. She was cheating on me. I knew what she was doing. Still looking at it like that. I had divorce papers filed, filled out, an attorney, in my P.O. box that night. I had half a bottle of vodka, and I bought some more that night. I'm thinking, you know, I just can't go on. I can't continue. So I went home after they put fluids in me all day long. I put fluids in me all night long and passed out. Well, May 14, 2004, I came to again. And I think that was one of my last days on earth. I say that because May 20th of this year was the last day on earth too, but God's got a sense of humor because I'm still here. May 14, 2004, I got my stuff together and I went back up to that detox center. I walked in. I said, lock me up. Please lock me up. I cannot stop drinking. If I go back to that hotel room, I'm going to drink. I cannot do this on my own. Step one says that we're powerless over alcohol. Our lives are unmanageable. I was at the detox center in Gainesville, Georgia, admitting that to them. Not to an AA meeting. I'd never been to AA. It had been suggested I might want to look at AA earlier on in life, but, you know, I'd heard AA was for quitters, and I wasn't ready to quit, so why go? But I sat down and talked with them, and they told me, he says, well, this will work. If you really want to stop drinking, we can help you. He said, this program that we go through, he says, we don't have a place to lock you up, but we'll check your vitals. You come in early in the morning, you leave late in the afternoon. So if you'll go to AA, he says, go over to a noon meeting and get you something to eat and come back. I'm going to explain a little bit more how this is going to work. And I'm thinking, you know, AA is not going to help me. It's no way that they can help me. Went over to that meeting, sat there through that meeting, and I didn't understand anything. It was like they were talking Greek. You know, my mind was running 1,000 miles an hour. Got up and left that meeting, and before I left, while they were sharing, I did hear one thing. One guy was talking about his sink leaking, and I'm like, damn, that's... So, you know, you get some weird things that happen in AA, and I'll attest to that. I've seen quite of it. I've been caused quite of it, too. So, but I got up, and I was leaving that meeting, and my sponsor caught me as I was leaving the front porch, and he asked me what was going on. And I told him, you know, I said, I can't stop drinking. I've lost my job. My wife's kicked me out of the house. I don't have a place to stay. I said, I've gone to this detox place, and they send me over here to this AA meeting. I don't know what it's about. He says, well, we have an informal meeting at our house on Friday night. He says, let me draw you a map how to get there. He says, you need to come up there tonight. He says, and plan on spending the night because you don't need to be alone. I'm like, okay, so I'm like, that was strange, you know, that somebody was opening their home and going to let this drunk stay with them. And I didn't know him from Adam. But I went back over to the detox center and told the guy over there what I learned at that class. It's a fellowship, it's not a class. And so you're welcome. But he told me I needed to go. And I went. I get over to the guy's house. His wife was chairing the meeting. She was there. I didn't know it was his wife. And he was there. And about six other people were there. Three boys, three kids, two dogs, a cat. We sat around. We had finger foods that night. And we talked. It was casual. A little bit about recovery. But more it was just fellowship. That's all it was. Spent the night that night, and I got up the next morning, and I'm thinking, okay, this is going to cost me something. People do not do this for free. And I walked upstairs, and there were three cups of coffee, a big book, and a Bible sitting on the kitchen table. I'm thinking, okay, there is a bill underneath one of those books. I know it. They're going to charge me for the coffee. I know they're going to charge me for that bed downstairs. But we sat there and we talked for a couple of hours. And they got to know a little bit more about me. And then the two of them went outside. And they were gone about 15 minutes. And for an alcoholic, it seemed like an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, that they were gone. But it was just a few minutes. And they came back in and they says, we think you need to stay with us for the next few weeks anyway. You don't need to be alone. I walked in that detox center and I says, lock me up. Step two says that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. Mm-hmm. That was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be locked away. Two members of Alcoholics Anonymous took me in. I'd never heard of that before. I've never seen this program the way it was laid out for me. And in the beginning, I started doing meetings morning, noon, and night. I don't know how long I'm talking, but when I run out of air, y'all seem to fall over, and I'll be done. So, I went to meetings morning, noon, and night because my mind was racing. My thoughts were crazy. I'm going through a divorce. Try going through a divorce and get sober at the same time. She knew every button to push, and if she didn't know it, she installed some. So, I did everything wrong in the first year. And every time I'd strike out, and I'd think I'd do something, and then I'd tell my sponsor about it. And he had this little phrase that he loved to say to me. He says, "How's that working for you?" And that would piss me off to no end, because I just knew I'd have this bright idea, and didn't realize this program's been around since 1935, and there ain't nothing bright about me. But I struggled through. Excuse me. I had started going through the steps. Step one was easy. I did that in the detox center. Two, I had that step down when I walked in doors of Alcoholics Anonymous because they took me in. I looked at step three and I had to make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understood Him. I didn't understand God and I didn't know what my will was. Well, my will at the time was to get my wife back. If I could get back into the house and not drink, I could get a job again. I'd make everything all right. Did you hear I would make everything all right? Well, the very first word in the first step says we, not I. I couldn't do nothing. Well, I had the big book, and I flipped through the big book, and there was a chapter to the wives in it. Now, my motives were pure, and my motives were good, but I didn't bother reading that chapter. I did invest in another book. I gave it to her. I didn't have to buy one for my employer because I didn't have an employee, so that saved me a little money. Well, I got the book back when I got the furniture out of the house. That's how that works. The big book says the same man will drink again. And the same man making amends when it's before time, you know, that's the ninth step. That's not the third step. Making amends before his time is the same man, and she knew I was the same man. So I screwed that part up. So the divorce went on through, and we fought tooth and nail there for a while, and then every time I'd start letting go of something, something else would get replaced. And if I just calm down, relax, quit fighting her. And the book says we cease fighting anyone or anything. Now I had to use this with my divorce. I'm living in my sponsor's son's bedroom, a little single bed. They bunked up so I'd have a room separate from them, from the two boys, or two of the three boys. And so I'm looking for a place to live as well, and I find a place, and it's one street down from my ex-wife's house. Why it's so close, I don't know. You know, that's just God's sense of humor. I think that's all that is. But I had put an offer in on the house. And then about that same length of time, she was wanting me to sign the house over to her. She wanted me to sign a quitclaim deed for the house that we were in and just give her the house. And we had $40,000, $50,000 worth of equity or something like that, you know, in the house. And I'm like, fine, I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm going to walk away from it. So I signed a quitclaim deed over to her. I fired one attorney that was taking care of the case because he was all about me and he was going to fight for me and he was going to get me all this stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to fight anymore. I looked through Gainesville and I found a woman attorney. And I hired her and I told her, I says, I want you to fight for my wife. I don't want you to fight for me. I just want this settled and I don't want to fight her anymore. I'm going to let go of everything. And so I turned that house over. The reason I say that, because after I'd gotten through my fourth and fifth step, my sponsor sent me up to Minneapolis, Minnesota, because I had a couple of weeks before the court case was going farther along, and he wanted me to get out of town so I'd stay out of my head and stay in AA. He wouldn't let me work. He told me there's a little bit of money in the bank, and I had decent credit because my wife took care of the credit cards and stuff. She took care of the bills, so my credit was pretty good. So I made a road trip to Minneapolis, Minnesota to meet his sponsor. Drove 1,154 miles one way up there to meet this man's sponsor because I wanted something different from what I had. Because when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I hated who I was. And I was looking for something different. So I went up there to see what AA was about outside of my little group. Went in, I was welcomed with open arms. I stayed up there for about 2 weeks, and I was welcomed in different homes. And everybody, they just passed me around. I'm like, you know, it's just, here, have this drunk. You know, y'all put him on your couch tonight. You know, it was of seeing more of the fellowship that I'd never thought existed. I've never seen a church that would do this. You know, I stood up in church one time and said, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Bobby. And everybody looked at me. You don't have that in a church. But AA is a fellowship that's beyond what my wildest dreams. But I was up there, and I had an offer I'd put in on a house. Like I said, I'd signed a quit claim deed over to my wife for the house that she was in. And my real estate agent called me, and I'm standing out back of the Bernie's house and drinking a cup of coffee, smoking a cigarette. And she calls me, and she says, Bob, she says, they haven't called us yet on the house. It was a VA foreclosure, and we lowballed the offer on the house. And she says, if they don't call back by Monday, I think this was on a Friday, she says, we're going to Florida. She says, I'm going to call them and go up a couple of $1,000, and if they don't take it, we're going to walk away from it. I said, well, fine. And I got off the phone, and I looked up. I said, well, if it ain't meant to be, it ain't meant to be. You know, I relinquished control. I turned that over to God. You know, and that's in our seventh step. That's where we turn everything over. You're not ready for all this, and I'm sorry, but that's part of the process. My phone rang instantly when I said that. She called me back. She says, Bobby, you're not going to believe this. You're a homeowner. She says, I no more got off the phone, and they called me, and they accepted your offer as it is. I did not have a job. I bought a house without a job. I don't know who does that. This drunk did it. With the help of a God of my understanding. Closed on the house. Went back to work 2 weeks after I closed on the house so I could pay for the thing. So he's got a sense of humor. But that was just one of the little miracles that happened for me in the very beginning to make me realize that this is more than meets the eye. It's a lot deeper than what meets the eye. So I get back to town. We fought through a divorce, and she it got down to the last little bit, and finally settled on the divorce, and everything finally finalized and all, got in. I was in the house, and everything seemed to be kicking along, doing pretty good. And my boss called and told me, he says, I need to drive to Birmingham. And I said, for what? I had a year and a half in the program, I guess. He says, you need to drive to Birmingham, and they're going to fire you. Well, I don't know if I can cuss on this podium, but I said, bullshit. I said, if they're going to fire me, they can do it over the telephone. I took my wheel back that instantly. I grabbed it, and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to drive over there to get fired, you know. They can do that over the phone call. That's a 3-hour drive. There's no reason for me to drive for that. walked into a meeting that night, and the guy saw me, and you could tell I was fit to be tied. And he asked me what was going on, and I told him. He said, "Bobby," he says, "you're either going to live in fear or you're going to live in faith. What are you going to live in?" And a calm came over me. And I says, "You know, you're right. You know, I went back to the old me. That quick we can go back to the old me. Without a drink we can go back to the old me." So I got up the next morning and I called the boy and I says, "Well, I'm going to drive to Birmingham. I'll be there Monday morning." Drove over there. And they told me the reason they were letting me go. And I'm like, you know, it's fine. You know, I got up and I shook their hand and thanked them for the opportunity of working with them. And said I enjoyed working with them. And, of course, to see their mouths wide open. And they were expecting me to, you know, respond and expecting me to blow up at them. And I didn't do it. And I got a kick out of that, too. You know, just being able to drive back to Atlanta that I didn't blow up at them. So, got back to Atlanta, and it was in November when it happened, and the year end, that part of the year, everybody's worried about Christmas parties and Thanksgiving, and year end, the money they've got to spend at the corporate level and the corporations and stuff like that, so, you know, nobody's hiring at that point in time. So I got involved in the meetings. I got more involved with the people in the rooms. I got more involved in my recovery and more involved with other people's recovery. The new people walking in the door stayed involved, doing what I needed to do for my recovery. Come February, March, I guess it was, I went back to work, working for the competition of the company that I'd left. And the guy asked me how much money I was making, and I lied to him because I'm not really all that honest all the time anyway. But, you know, so I told him what I wanted to be making, and they gave me $1 an hour raise over that, so I think I did pretty good. You know, I went to work for them making 25% more money than what I was making with the other company. Now, mind you, I was working paycheck to paycheck, like most of us do. And so I go back to work for this company, and then all the bills are still hitting me, and I'm like, "Oh God, how am I going to get all this caught up? I just don't see it happening." And I'm like, "What am I doing wrong? What am I missing?" I said, "Well, I mean, I work with other people. I'm doing what I need to as far as recovery and as far as helping others. And what am I missing?" And just something hit me. So, damn, do an inventory. Okay, well, let's do the steps on this too, you know. So I started writing an inventory up. And then I thought, well, shit, it's been 2 years. I hadn't filed income taxes. I might as well find out what I'm going to owe them. And my sister's a tax accountant, so I had somebody that I could call and get her to look it all up and file all the paperwork and everything and get my taxes filed. So I could put that down on the list of what else I was going to have to pay. And she called me back. She says, "Bobby," she says, "did you know you're getting money back this year?" Now, this is 2 years in recovery. My wife already took care of the bills and taxes, and we always owed money for some reason with her. It's probably because she was stuffing it, getting ready to get rid of me. That's probably what it was, but, you know, I don't know. But she deserved everything she got. She deserved a lot more than what she got. So I said, "No, I didn't realize that." She says, "Yeah, between the 2 years, you're getting a little over $10,000 back." And I just went into tears because I thought I owed money. Doing the next right thing, God put everything in place and in front of me. Me forgetting things and I wouldn't have thought of doing that. I wouldn't have thought of taking an inventory while I was drinking. Not doing the next right thing. Now, you may say it's just a coincidence that I was owed that amount of money, tax money, but I don't see a coincidence there. But moving right along. But things like that happened over the years. I've been sober 13 and a half years now. And no, it ain't. It's just a day at a time. But I remember my last drunk. I remember walking in the doors. I remember being beat to the broken to the point of nothing was funny, that I hated everything. But being able to live a life and to laugh and to cut up and joke when I'm standing up here behind the podium, you know, and I do. I cut up a lot. And in my home group, you know, they get mad at me all the time because I'll call somebody out just as soon as they walk in the door. That's just who I am. And I've decided that asshole is a term of endearment because I'm called that quite often. But I believe in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because it saved my life. It gave me a life worth living. It didn't save my life. This year, first of April, I was going to take a vacation to Florida for just a long weekend. And the gal I was going with has a Toyota Prius, half electric, half gas. I am not a Prius kind of guy. My Dodge truck I bought in 2005 had 354,000 miles on it. It was not ready to make a trip to Florida, and so, you know, I decided I was going to look for a new vehicle. And I was working up in Jefferson, and I got online and I Googled a Dodge Ram with a sunroof, 2015-16, because I wanted it fairly new, but I didn't want to pay the cost of a new one. And there was one over at dealerships, Billy Howell Ford over in Cumming, which is a Christian dealership. They advertise on the Fish radio. And so I thought, okay, that's a good dealership. Called over there and I asked the guy, I said, how long have you worked for the dealership? He says, well, about 6 months. And he was kind of hesitant when he said that. And I said, well, I want you to sell it to me. I want somebody new that's starting out to sell me the vehicle. He said, oh, okay. He said, when do you want to come look at it? And I said, well, I'm going to come this afternoon. And he says, I got to leave at 5 because my wife just had a baby. I said, well, that's another reason I want you to sell me the vehicle. You know, it's a young family. I want to support a young family. That wasn't me back years ago. But I wanted to make sure that I supported him as far as his family goes. So I left the plant that I was at, went by and got my old truck because I had a company vehicle. Drove over there, and as I'm going over there, I'm thinking, okay, if there's the least little bit of hiccup, I'm going to walk away from this truck. I'm not supposed to buy it. The least little thing goes wrong, I'm not going to buy this truck. I get over there, and the boy's got the truck backed up to the front door. And I pull in and introduce myself, and he asked me if I wanted to trade my truck in. I says, probably not. I said, I'll entertain it, but y'all aren't going to give me anything for it, not with the miles on the truck. And he told me, he says, let me get one of the sales managers to look at it while we test drive the new one. So I'm standing out there, and I hear over the intercom, I says, Tom, Jerry, I need one of y'all at the sales counter. I'm like, did I just hear Tom and Jerry? And he came back out and got in the truck with me, and I asked him, and he says, yeah, everybody laughs about that. And I said, that's just too funny. So we went, and we came back and walked in, and Tom was at the sales counter. And he says, you look familiar. He says, have we ever met? And I says, you ever been to prison? And, I don't care. I just, that's just who I am. And, of course, that rings out over the whole sales room floor, and people are turning around looking at me. So, anyway, we laughed about that. And he told me to give me $25 for the truck. And I said, no, I'll just keep it. You know, I says, I got some money I want to put down on the new one. And I'll just buy it outright. So I filled out the financial paperwork and sent it back to the credit manager. And I sat there for about 30 minutes. And the salesman came over and he says, Dudley will see you now. He says, it's the credit manager. I said, Dudley? Dudley do right, you know, this is just tuned down. What is going on here? It's too funny. I walked in the guy's office and he says, Mr. Little, he said, I've got you set up for 60 months, zero down. I'm like, I have $10,000 I want to put down on the truck because I didn't want the payments. And he says, no, he says, I've got you zero down. He says, you don't want to put that money down. He says, the reason why, because if you put that money down, you drive out on the lot, somebody hits that truck, your insurance is going to pay it off. The gap would pay off anything different from what's owed on the loan versus what you're paying on the truck, what the insurance company would. But you'd lose that $10,000 if that other person didn't have insurance. You'd just be out that money. I never thought of that before. So we signed all the paperwork and got all that done and walked out. And the whole point of this story is, like I said, if there was a least little hiccup, I was going to walk away from my truck. It wasn't supposed to be mine. Now, this thing has got everything under the sun on it. You know, it's got, hell, the mirrors wave at you. It's just, I got all sorts of stuff on this truck. A lot more than what I needed. But, so we walk out, and Tom shakes my hand and congratulates me and walks back inside, and the salesman, Joe, shakes my hand and congratulates me. He takes a picture of me beside the truck, and he puts a drive-out sticker on it. He says, well, congratulations. He says, now you can go home, and he says, you can park that in your driveway and crack your good cold beer open and just enjoy your truck sitting there. I says, yeah, I would, but I don't drink anymore. He says, you know, something told me I needed to ask you that. Is that scary or what? I mean, a chill came over me when he said that. I says, what? He says, my wife's been after me about my drinking. He says, how'd you stop drinking? I'm like, where did this come from? Because I didn't say anything about AA. You know, nothing in my truck said AA. I mean, I wear the emblem, but it's under my shirt. I mean, I didn't. All I said was, you've ever been to prison before? You know, that may have been a sign that, you know, just never know. But for him to ask me that was just unbelievable. And I says, well, where do you live? He says, well, in Buford. I'm some bitch. I says, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, there's a Taco Bell on 20 in Buford. I'm there just about every night of the week. If you ever want to go to a meeting, I'll be glad to introduce you to some people and try to get you involved in the program. And that was in April. Newborn baby. This boy's stopping drinking when that baby's brand new. My son got married 3 weeks after I got into the program. When I went to his wedding, I couldn't afford to buy him a wedding present because I was just beginning to get sober. I wasn't sober by no means, but I was going to be there. It's the only child I've got. And I told him I couldn't buy him anything for his wedding present. He said, Dad, he says, your sobriety is the most important gift you could give me. Now, that cuts like a knife. That cut deep. So I've been working on that gift for the past 13 years. And this accident that I had when I was in the hospital, he showed up and he was there the full time I was in the hospital. The day I got out of the hospital was June 6th of this year. That was his anniversary, his wedding anniversary. He was with this old man instead of with his wife and two children. I've got two granddaughters who've never seen me drink. Thank God they've never seen me drink. This has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You're going to go through pure hell in the very beginning with your thoughts and everything else, and make sure you get my number while you're here. But you're the most important person in this room. Thank God there's a room for you to come to. Anyway, with that, I think I'll shut up. I've said too much already. I'm done.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Oh, man, I know that took a lot out of you. Vanessa, would you please come up here and hand these chips out? Like only you can.
Why? Oh, here they go. My name is Vanessa, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, family. We have a chip system that measures cleans out. We have the white chips just for the day. We have the silver chips for 30 days. We have the red chips for 90 days. We have the yellow chips for 6 months. We have the green for 9 months. And we have the blue for a year or more. Would anyone like to surrender just for today? All right. Welcome home. You know, we got a group of men. We keep coming.
We'll all be together on that broad highway.